This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Live your best life
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Live from Expo 2020 Dubai.
Fantastic to have you with us for another episode of the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Talking about some of my favourite things today: food, travel and animals. It was Pets and Vets with Dr. Hannah Rolls who was on hand to talk about the what you need to know before you take on a cat. She was giving us the real deal. So if you are considering getting an animal, listen to her wise words. Talking travel with Nathan Taylor of Donata Travel as well. Where are some of the best bargains for that upcoming long National Day weekend? Some winter travels as well, including chasing the Northern Lights. And where's the best place he has ever been? We were also speaking to Raw Africa about their role, why they think it's so important to get tourists back on the continent. And speaking to the dream team behind Barrel, the chef and owner Tommy and GM Ruby of one of the hottest restaurants at Expo 2020. And their star dish might just surprise you.
Pets and Vets.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
In association with Royal Canin, the trusted expert in nutrition for your cat and dog.
Dr. Hannah, how are you?
Hello.
Oh my goodness. Not good for my nerves, that. How are things with you?
Good. Apart from the last sort of 10 minutes of nervous sweating.
Not at all. Great to have you with us. We've had smelly spaniels in our household over the last couple of days. The problem has been resolved by, guess what? A trip to the vets. It's funny how we always never seem to take our own advice. We talk day in, day out with Pets and Vets about going in for checkup. I'm like, nah, I can sort this at home. No, it did require a trip to the vet. Lucy is no longer smelly. How are things in your household?
We are good. Yeah, we have survived the Halloween, the candy rush, and keeping it out of the way of the dog and the cat. Yes. I think, you know, when you kind of hide it from the children, you just want to make sure you can't hide it somewhere that the dog or the cat can find it. A sense of smell is a bit better.
I need someone to hide the candy from me, more to the point. There's a packet of Smarties just calling to me this morning. I don't think the kids have counted, so I hope I don't get busted. Lots of questions coming in for you this afternoon. A lot of people have some behavioural questions about pulling on leads. A really lovely one here from Simi talking about getting a cat. And Maria has got a cat that has got ringworm. So let's go over the text line. 4001 is the SMS if you want Dr. Hannah's advice on anything that's bothering you about your pet. This is your chance. Don't need to make an appointment. Don't need to wrangle your cat into the cat carrier or bribe your dog into the boot. You just need to pick up your phone. Maria's been in touch saying, I recently had my cat groomed in a spa. It was not a cheap spa. I was expecting it to be clean and safe, but unfortunately she got ringworm after that. Now I'm scared to send her again for outside grooming. Treatment of the ringworm is expensive, plus I don't want her to get sick. What do I need to ask the spa or grooming centre to ensure my baby won't get the same disease again?
Okay, so that was very unlucky. So ringworm is not actually a ringworm, it's a type of fungus and a fungal skin infection that can spread. It's zoonotic, so it can go from animal to animal, but it also can go from animal to person and vice versa. So you're right to be very concerned. I would approach the grooming or the spa facilities and ask how they sterilize in between each pet, and the practices that they've got in place to make sure that they are not unwittingly allowing, you know, an animal to come in that has this skin condition. And especially if you have a very long-haired dog or cat, it can be very difficult actually to see the lesion sometimes. So hopefully this was just an isolated incident, but there was just bad luck on everybody's part. But definitely ask them, you know, the ways in which they mitigate this happening again. Have they had experience of it? What are they using to sort of soak the blades in and the scissors? And how are they, you know, just like we would do if we were going to the spa as well.
Brilliant.
So that's what I would recommend.
Thanks, Hannah. So Maria, sounds like you've been a bit unlucky there, but ask the right questions and certainly draw their attention to it so they can maybe change the process that they do in the future. And I hope your little one's all right.
Pets and Vets.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
In association with Royal Canin, the trusted expert in nutrition for your cat and dog.
Talking animals this afternoon, Dr. Hannah Rolls is live on the line to help you out with any issues that you might have. It might be health, it might be behaviour, it might be in need of a second opinion. A question here, Dr. Hannah from D. And D says, I've started going out with a lovely girl who has a cat. The cat, however, has a rude name and she inherited it from her ex. I want to change the name of the cat because I'm invested in this relationship. Will the cat get confused? It deserves a lovely name. I don't know how old this cat is and I've got no idea how attached it is to the name. I also want to know what the name is. But can you change an animal's name if you've adopted one and you've got a better name in mind? Or in this situation, you feel like it just deserves a better shot at life and its branding in the world.
I'd say so. Nobody deserves to go through life with a rude name, no. Do they? Even if his comprehension of the fact that it's rude is probably not really there. I'd say change away. If it offends you and you don't think it suits him, then change away. Often when we are talking about dogs, they tend to respond to like a single syllable noise a bit better. So I'd say try and keep it similar. Mm-hmm. Possibly use the same kind of sounds and use your imagination. But yeah, if it's offensive to you and it's offensive to him, then change it.
Okay, thank you so much. And I hope that, please let me know what the original name is and what you've gone for. I'm curious if they rhyme. Samantha's been interesting. I've got a small Yorkie, about 4 kilos. And I was wondering if I should continue using a dog harness or transition to a collar. Is it harmful if I just use a collar for his walks? I think it's quite interesting because it does tend to vary from animal to animal what they prefer. Some find that harnesses seem to be really uncomfortable and all they want to do is wiggle out of them, whereas collars can tug a little bit on their necks. What does the kind of science say and what have you seen over the years? Is one better than the other?
Personally, from experience, I much prefer a harness. I'm just worried about anything that kind of sits around the neck. Not necessarily because it could cause damage, although we do worry about that, but because it could aggravate any trauma or any condition kind of around the head and throat, and things like laryngeal paralysis will be made much worse by having the collar around. And I think it also depends on the dog. If he pulls a lot and he's very energetic when he's walking, then definitely a harness rather than something that's around his neck, because that won't do him any good in the long term. That's just personal sort of preference for me, but I think that it works for a lot of the pet owners and a lot of the pets that I've seen.
Hope that helps, Samantha. Simi's been in touch on 4001 saying, we're thinking about getting a cat, but before we bring in a feline friend, we want to make sure we can take good care of it. I don't know if this is the right place to ask, but any advice is greatly appreciated. It is the right place to ask. My husband and I both work long hours. We've got 2 toddlers. Nanny is reluctant, but says she can handle it. Hubby says no, but me and the kids really want a pet. What do you think? So it sounds like a busy family, like many, many here in the UAE. What does it take to make it work if you are taking on a cat or indeed a kitten for the first time, Hannah?
I personally think it takes all family members to be on board because we're looking at sort of, when you're talking about bringing an animal into your home, it's not just the time, but I like that they've already started thinking about it, that their approach that they've got and phoning in today all sort of are positive signs to me that they are thinking about this, they're well aware of what it entails, particularly when we're talking about cats and dogs. They can live for a very long time. So if you're going for a kitten, you know, this is a sort of 16 to 18 year potentially, if they live a long, lovely, healthy life, commitment that you're making. So everybody really does need to be on board. And it's not just the time and the situation, the setup at home. There is also an added expense to make sure that you're keeping up with the food, with the preventative medication, the veterinary care that your pet will need throughout its life. So I think it's really good to go and talk to a vet. If you have a local clinic, you know, they don't mind sitting down having a chat with you about it. Their nursing staff are often very knowledgeable about, you know, all the different pets and the husbandry that's involved taking care of that animal. And then also you could approach some of the adoption centres because they could do a foster scheme. And that might be the very best way for everyone to decide whether or not this suits them by taking on a temporary foster. So giving a rescued animal a chance to adapt to a home environment without taking on that sort of permanent responsibility to see if it's a good fit for your family, but also allowing the animal the chance to kind of be out of a rescue centre or out of a kennels or cattery environment and give them a chance to live inside.
Pets and Vets
on Afternoons with Helen Farmer
in association with Royal Canin, the animal before the owner.
Joining us live on Microsoft Teams, Dr. Hannah Rolls is with us, taking your questions, your concerns and some of your quirky stories about your pets too. My heart goes out to anyone who's having issues, and there's nothing worse than seeing your pet in pain. And poor Lakshmi's been in touch saying, I ran over my 9-month-old kitten's back leg with my office chair this morning. She ran into the bed, stared at me scared. I thought she was okay because she didn't meow, but I just came home from work this afternoon and found she was still hiding. I pulled her out. She started to hiss and yowling and then suddenly bit me. Taking to the vet tomorrow, but wondering what you think it sounds like. Will she need surgery? Feeling so guilty right now. Oh, Lakshmi. What would you say? What does this sound like? And being run over by an office chair, not ideal for a little one. Could this have done some serious damage?
Potentially, because they're only very small, and you think the bones, there's lots of bones in the leg and in the feet in particular, and it would be it's not always that obvious that they've hurt themselves in what we can see just by looking with the naked eye, if you see what I mean. I would strongly recommend going to the vets just so that they can have a feel of the leg and all the joints, and we can see how she's moving it, especially when they're hiding away and they're scared. They won't show us properly how they're moving. So definitely a trip to the vets just to make sure that there is nothing wrong. I've certainly seen them, they bounce really well. I've certainly seen sort of worse kind of falls or worst incidents result in absolutely no injuries whatsoever, but let's be safe and be on the safe side and make sure that the vets had a proper look.
Okay, sorry Lakshmi, I hope you're okay there.
These things happen.
These things
they
do
really
happen,
do.
And it happens with babies as well. I challenge you to find a parent out there who hasn't had a baby roll off a bed or something. And
exactly,
they're resilient little things, they really are. Christine, thank you for your message saying, in June I fostered a 1.5-year-old cat called Simba. He is amazing. Fell in love straight away, but we've got one problem. He doesn't like to poop in the litter box. He poops somewhere nearby. When I catch him in the middle of action, he goes to the litter box himself and does his business. He knows he's not allowed to poop on the floor. I love this. He poops every day between 8 and 9 p.m., so I'm trying to keep an eye on him during this time. Regular. But as soon as I turn my back, he does it fast on the floor. When I got him, he wasn't neutered. I took him to the vet straight away. I thought this behavior is because of a new home, but I'm sure he's got used to it by now. He's really affectionate, loves belly rubs, cuddling. He's just a sweetheart, but this pooping problem drives me a bit nuts. Don't blame you. We've had a number of people having similar problems in the past, Dr. Hannah. What would you advise as a good starting point for Christina and the cat?
Right. I do think that this will warrant a trip to the vets for a chat, because it does sound more behavioural. Possibly what we call the term middening is when an animal uses defecation to mark territory. So we might find that he's doing that. What you can do in the meantime, and I'd say just to kind of try and get a hold of the situation, is have a look at the litter tray and the litter situation and see if it could be a case that he doesn't like the litter, he doesn't like the litter tray. You can use puppy pads maybe to put in the area that he is going to make cleanup a little bit easier. And I would always say have two litter trays, so the 1+1 rule. And in this case, perhaps if it is as simple as a preference that he doesn't like going in the one that you already have, maybe make an effort to get a different size or shape litter tray and put different type of litter in there, either clumping or non-clumping crystals, or and just have a play around and see if there's that you can see a pattern or a preference. But I do think, especially if he's been neutered and this is a consistent behavior that we're seeing, and otherwise he doesn't seem very stressed, he seems okay, that you know, a trip to the vets to discuss everything, including diet, you know, including other habits. Is he playing well? Is he urinating as normal? Does he pee in the litter tray? Is just the pooping? All of these things can give the vet a clue as to how we can help move forward.
Keep us posted, Christina. Let us know what the magic combination is for you and your cat. I've got a couple of skin issues we're going to run past you quickly, Dr. Hannah. One's from Sabrina saying, Coco is a 7-year-old Shih Tzu, generally good health, but gets scabby spots in her back with scaly dandruff. She's on hypoallergenic food. What else can I do?
Okay. That would, so we probably, once we've sort of taken into account the hypoallergenic food, if we're suspicious of a food allergy being the cause of a skin condition, and it absolutely can be, we would also look to how frequently you're bathing your dog and what you're using as well, to see if that would either alleviate the sort of the itch and the spots and the symptoms that we're seeing, or in some cases if we're doing it too frequently, that can also be the cause of the symptoms. So if we always say, and if you have healthy skin, that for a dog or cat, they don't need to be bathed. getting my words confused, bathed more than once a month. Obviously, that is different if we have a skin condition and you've been advised by the vet to do it differently. But these are the kind of questions that your vet will be asking, because if we're bathing too frequently, we can strip the skin of its natural oils and its response is to sort of upregulate the secretion, and that can make a lovely environment for yeasts and bacteria to thrive. So a trip to the vets, if the hypoallergenic food isn't working on its own, let's have a look a bit more closely at what's going on.
And could that be a case of the vet taking a small sample, you know, seeing if it is a yeast or bacteria?
Yes, we love a sample, either a tape strip or a swab or a bit of a squeeze. Yeah, love it.
Okay, and now a cat with a problem. Amanda's saying, my cat's forever scratching around his neck to the extent it looks like he's been in a fight, and it keeps clearing up and coming back. What does this sound like?
Now, this is interesting because it's an itch around the head and neck. Without seeing the cat, obviously, we can't make any assumptions, but that tends to be sort of symptoms that we can see with a food allergy. Tends to affect sort of the mouth and the face and around the head and neck. Firstly, we want to have a good look at the skin and see what it looks like, especially when the lesions are there and the circumstances under which they seem to get better and then get worse again. So I think some of the questions we ask about itchy pets is it something that we see all year round? Is it seasonal? Do you change the diet frequently? Does this coincide with the symptoms? Are you up to date with your ectoparasite treatment? So does your cat go outside? Does he stay inside? All of these questions. But I do think this sounds a bit suspicious. And a chat with your vet would potentially indicate whether or not they think something like a food trial to see if we've got any allergies of that nature could be really, really helpful.
Great advice as ever, Dr. Hannah. Thank you again for your time today. Always invaluable, sometimes saving a trip to the vet, sometimes offering reassurances, and sometimes giving us a call to action to make sure our pets are healthy. Dr. Hannah Rolls speaking to us this afternoon.
Pets and Vets.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
In association with Royal Canin, the animal before the owner.
We're marking Animal Shelter Awareness Week. It is, of course, falling from the 1st, the 7th of November. And joining us on the line now is Rowan. She is the founder of House of Hounds, and they're dedicated to rescuing stray, neglected, abandoned and surrendered Salukis and hounds and rehoming them here in the UAE. Rowan, thank you so much for joining us today and telling us a little bit about what you do. Where and how did you get started on House of Hounds? Where did the idea come from?
I always dreamt to have a Saluki since my childhood, since I was born in Alain, and they were playing with us in the streets. And where I came from, the culture that I came from, was not allowing us to have dogs in the house. And after I got married and had more freedom, so I had the chance to own my own dog in my own house. I was gifted an unwanted Saluki by his own breeder. It ended him dead the next day with distemper virus. And this is how it grows in my mind, you know, that we should work on educating the owners about vaccination and the importance of looking after them and treating them as pets and loving pets, not as objects or livestock animals.
And tell us a little bit about Salukis as a breed. What is it about them that you love, Rowan?
They're very elegant dogs. They're very calm. They're gentle. They're amazing with kids. They follow your energy in the house. They're not as what people think, that they are very active breed. They're couch potato, to be honest with you.
And really?
I love every family. Yes, yes. I would love every family in the UAE to give them a try, to see how they will behave inside the house, because they follow your energy. So if you're active, they are, and happy around you. And if you're not and you're a couch potato, they'll sit beside you. Actually, I'm sitting now and my Saluki is sitting beside me.
Aww, after a pet. What's your Saluki called?
Her name is Samra, means brunette.
Oh, really? Is she a brunette? Yeah.
She's a dark, but in Arabic, Samra means dark skin, you know.
Oh, give her a little pet from me. So,
thank you, I will. Thank you so much.
Tell us a little bit about how it works then when it comes to helping some of these Salukis and hounds that really do need a second chance.
We usually get a call from the owners or from people who met or saw the Salukis on the street or abandoned in a desert area. And we go and help the dog. We take them direct to the clinic. We try to vet them and check their blood and everything about them, you know, like vaccinating them, checking their health. And then we start asking to find fosters for them because we want to rehab them to be having them as a, you know, a house pet. Mm-hmm. And this is when we start asking for help from the community to foster, to help us promoting the Saluki to be adopted here or abroad. And sadly, we don't have a big audience here in the UAE more than abroad. So most of our Salukis are flying out of the country, mm-hmm. sadly. while the same idea here, like, oh, they're big-sized dogs, they can't stay in a home, they can't stay in an apartment, and it's a totally different idea than what you think. You know, they really fit in well in an apartment or in a house.
So as you say, a lot of them going internationally, how does it work about relocating dogs from your side?
So we basically take the dog, we medicate them, we look after them, we vaccinate them, and we find the right time. Of course, we fix them, so we castrate or spay, and then we start promoting them. We have partners in Europe and in America that we discuss with them, the potential adopting families, and we tried our best to find flight buddies to take them to the destination.
What's a flight buddy? What does that person do?
So a flight buddy is only, it's a very easy process, to be honest with you. It's just like contributing your time and effort just to take the dog from A to B. And we do everything. We book the ticket of the dog. We pay all the expenses. We do the paperwork through a pet relocation agent. And then the dog, when the dog reached the like the destination, the family is there or the organization is there to receive the dog from the other end, you know. And we always stay in touch with our adopters. We always are friends with our fosters. We need more fosters. We need more support from the community on this matter.
What kind of families or individuals would make a good candidate, Rowan?
We're welcome to have any fosters around. We ask them to fill the form. We understand what's the personality of the Saluki we have. We try to match them if the Saluki is friendly with cats, if they're good or afraid of kids or not, but they're always amazing around kids. So they're very, very safe dogs around kids. But we try to get the right fit, you know, the right match for them. We provide food, the balls of food, the bed, everything comes with the dog. We just need the care, the love, and willing to give the medicine if needed or not. But we cover all the medicals. We cover everything from our side. We just need a home, a proper, loving shelter to show them that they can be home pets.
And sometimes I'm sure these foster homes turn into forever homes.
And this is a nice idea. At the same time, as much as we are happy to have them adopted and foster fail, at the same time, sadly, we lose the foster home. But yes, bless them. They always foster and they always adopt and foster again and again. We have few fosters that they're very reliable and very, very nice to us. And they always foster 3 to 4 dogs in a home. This is what we're a small community of Saluki lovers here in the UAE. But we really want to grow it bigger and we really need support. At the same time, you know, we have support from Royal Canin, mm-hmm. In the UAE here. So they are providing the food to us. This is helping us a lot, you know, with finding fosters. So the food is already provided. That saves us a lot of, you know, efforts on the money that we can at least cover it on medicals instead of buying the food.
So for anyone listening today that can support, whether that is through fostering, adopting, sponsorship, it's salukiinternationalrescue.com. That is houseofhounds_UAE.
Home or away.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We are talking travel. I have to say, Expo always inspires me to think about different countries and different cuisines. And we've got a long weekend coming up to celebrate that and to give us a lowdown on the latest travel guidelines, help you out with some inspiration as well. Delighted to be joined live in studio in person after seeing you for too long, Nathan Taylor, on Microsoft Teams. I can see you in 3D. It's wonderful to have you. How are you?
It's wonderful to be here, Helen. So good to see you finally.
I know. So Nathan Taylor is the product manager at Donata Travel, and he's here with all the latest travel guidelines. And I am nominating you as everyone's personal travel concierge this afternoon. So if you're a bit stuck on where to go, you need a recommendation, this is your man, and it might be with his Donata hat on or his traveling hat on. Tell us a little bit about some of your travels over the years. Is there a one holiday that was a complete disaster and you would never want to visit that country or relive the experience ever again?
Oh, no, I don't think I've ever had a complete disaster. I always see the silver lining of any cloud. Had some hairy moments going around India, as I think most people who've done India probably agree with me. And then, you know, I think we've spoken about this before, but I did the Trans-Siberian across Russia, and that was a bit of a learning curve because every train stop is in Moscow time, regardless of where you are across Russia. So
what?
You can, yeah. Yeah. So there were some hairy moments there a bit.
Logistically.
Yeah. But we got through it and everything's fine. So.
Okay. What about, because we have been talking food this afternoon and Expo is such a great spot for eating. Is there a meal when you think back to eating over the years and so many countries think, oh, that is why I traveled. That is the foodie experience of the traveler.
Yeah. So just recently we went to Italy. We were lucky enough to get a reservation at Osteria Francescana.
Yeah. No, you didn't.
Yeah, I did. So
for anyone who doesn't know, can you explain a little bit about why this is so special?
Yes. So Osteria Francescana is Massimo Bottura's restaurant.
My husband has been informed that should the worst happen, he's going to be my next husband. Chef Massimo's amazing.
Yeah, and it's rated as one of the best restaurants on the planet. It's won multiple awards. It's voted number one restaurant in the world a couple of times now, but it was absolutely sensational. And we were lucky enough to stay at his villa as well, which was excellent. A couple of weeks before that, I think Posh and Bex were there. Not while we were there though. And we got to eat in their villa with them cooking directly for us as well. So we could walk into the kitchen, we could take photos, we could ask some questions. It was just absolutely second to none.
It was lovely to meet you 16 minutes ago. It's amazing how quick you can go off someone. So you basically were cooked for by the king of cheese, the man who basically saved the Parmesan industry in the heart of Modena in his villa.
It was sensational. Highly recommend it for any foodie listening. It's one of those must-dos. And, you know, we were so lucky. You know, one of the upsides of the pandemic was we managed to get a reservation somehow. And it was just superb. I can't speak more highly of that experience.
Oh, no, I want some cheese. Nathan Taylor's with us this afternoon, product manager at Donata.
Home or away.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We are talking travel this afternoon. Delighted to be joined live in the studio by Nathan Taylor from Donata Travel. It's been an exciting week on the announcement front, and especially for your lot. What's been happening for those of the Australian persuasion?
Yes, there's some great news happening for Australians. So New South Wales and Victoria are now open without any quarantine for fully vaccinated Australians, finally. It's been a long wait for us, but it's really great. So those two states are open now, so you just need to obviously be fully vaccinated 14 days before you get in. There's a Australian travel declaration that you have to fill out as well, and you do have to have a PCR test before you can get in.
What about kids? Because obviously there's lots of families who want to be reunited.
Yeah, so anyone, any children who are travelling with their parents, as long as they're fully vaccinated, they can get in as well.
Okay, so the parents need to be fully vaccinated, and presumably there's always the usual medical exceptions and
Absolutely,
exemptions.
Yeah. Medical exemptions and children under 12 who aren't vaccinated, travelling with their parents who are fully vaccinated, can get into either New South Wales or Victoria.
There you go. Get booking. Oh, no, what?
No, the bad news is it's just for the other states. So Queensland, Western Australia, South Australia and Tasmania are still imposing the quarantine.
So. Okay. So check your routes,
Absolutely.
Check your T's and C's and get your paperwork, guys. But lovely news at this time of year, especially with that long weekend coming up and Christmas, of course, around the corner. What about the states? Because they've unveiled some new rules as well.
They sure have. So from the 8th of November, you will need to be fully vaccinated in order to get into the US. So it's a bit of a change from what it's been at the moment. Now, obviously, with the US, things may change from state to state. Mm-hmm. So as always, we always recommend that you check on donatatravel.com for the different state regulations, because we've got them all up there. But fully vaccinated is any vaccine that's approved by the FDA or the WHO. So Sinopharm's included in that, Pfizer's included in that, AstraZeneca, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson. So
good stuff, guys. There you go. What about the UK? Because for the longest time, we were waiting for these little updates about the traffic light system and what does it mean. What's happening out of the UK?
Well, the red list is officially empty.
Oh.
Which is excellent. So there are no more countries on the red list, which is great news. The red list still remains, and it is being reviewed every 3 weeks.
It's like it's a threat.
It is.
It's a naughty list. If you don't behave yourselves, you go straight on over.
Exactly. So at the moment, there's no countries that are in the red list, which means that anyone who is fully vaccinated can enter the UK.
We have had a number of messages during the course of the week about India and the relationship with the UAE when it comes to flight bans, because last week they announced that there was going to be an international flight ban extended until the 30th of November, but there have been bubbles as such formed with a number of countries. How many countries, and are we on the favoured list?
We certainly are in the favoured list. There's about 25 countries that they have air bubble agreements with, and I think this did cause a bit of confusion at the beginning of the week with the travel ban announcement. So just to be very, very clear, the UAE does have an air bubble travel pact with India, which means that we can travel back and forth from India as long as, again, we're fully vaccinated.
So. Okay, hope that helps. If you do need any clarity on that, please do get in touch. Nathan's with us until 4 o'clock this afternoon as we're talking travel. And I always find it really interesting to hear, you know, on donatatravel.com, where are the hotspots? Where are people looking at and booking? We've always talked about, you know, the Maldives, Indian Ocean, but Thailand has been something that's a lot of people have spent a lot of time over the summer and have been certainly thinking about it, and they've had some revisions as well.
Yeah, they sure have. So Thailand is obviously went through a bit of a process of reopening. There was a phase one reopening for Phuket, which meant you had to be there for 7 days before you could leave your resort. But now from the 1st of November, the Tourism Authority of Thailand has announced that it is set to welcome fully vaccinated foreign visitors to wider Thailand. So Bangkok, Koh Samui, any of those places is now all good to go. There is still a few little hoops you have to jump through. So you do have to be fully vaccinated. You do have to spend your first night in a hotel in quarantine because you will get a test on arrival. So as soon as you get that test result back, then you're free to go around Thailand. Absolutely beautiful country.
There you go, guys.
Home or away.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Talking travel, there is a long weekend on the horizon, and we want you to enjoy it as best you can. Joining us live on the line, not live on the line, live in the studio, I'm so used to saying it, Nathan Taylor's with us, product manager at Donata Travel, who's just been giving me some advice on what I should do for my 40th next year. What have we decided?
Well, it's between New York and Japan at this point.
I think it's going to be Japan. Mm. Sorry to my husband who hasn't been to New York, and I did say I'd take him because it's his 40th next year as well, but I just think I really, really fancy eating and, you know, exploring.
It's beautiful.
My history, because my parents lived there once. 4001, if you've got any questions, if you need Nathan to sort out your travel dilemmas. Now, we've seen so much traffic coming in and out of Dubai Airport. It's en route to cross the 27 million mark by the end of this year. That's a projection set by Paul Griffiths, CEO of Dubai Airport. So yeah, pretty busy as COVID-imposed restrictions ease across the globe and travel gains momentum. So looking ahead to that long weekend, National Day weekend is coming upon us. First weekend, of course, in December. What do you think? Is it too late to book anything?
It's never too late.
But you're going to have to go fast.
Exactly. Okay. Everybody is booking for National Day already. We have seen a huge spike in bookings for the week. So please, if you are thinking about going away for National Day, now is the time. Get in, talk to one of the Donata travel experts and get your holiday booked.
Let's talk about where to go. And just to be clear, the prices we're discussing are accommodation.
Yes.
And flights. Some might have breakfast and dinner, but when we talk about things being, you know, under 2,000 dirhams, that is your flights included. Let's start with Azerbaijan. This is very much on my list because it's actually not too far from here. What is on offer there? And do you think kind of 3 nights would be enough?
Well, I mean, look, 3 nights is sometimes never enough if you really want to get and explore places. But I think Azerbaijan is so close, it's so easy to get to, and you know, if you want to explore Baku, which is the capital city, then 3 nights is perfect. You'll be able to see everything you need to see, eat what you need to eat, and then come back home feeling nice and refreshed.
How much?
So we've got a 3-night package in Baku, staying at the 4-star Supreme Hotel, with breakfast daily and return economy class flights, all for 1,825 dirhams per person.
There you go, Azerbaijan. Now, I just saw the Georgia Pavilion. I walked past it earlier. And Zina, we need to get our passports sorted out. We're travelling around all the time and we haven't got our passports sorted.
I know. Yeah, I'll get us passports.
This is on the to-do list because, yeah. I feel like a childish need to, like, gotta collect them all. It's past the Georgia Pavilion. And that has become such a popular spot for travellers out of the UAE over the last couple of years. And that can be for eating and drinking and cheese tours, but also skiing and city breaks. What do you think the weather would be like in a month's time?
Look, it's definitely getting cooler.
That's good.
Exactly.
I want to wear boots and a jumper.
Yeah.
Couldn't be happier.
Yeah. And it's a great city to walk around in. So, you know, obviously it's part of Dubai Fitness Month. Yep. So, you know, I think Tbilisi is an excellent, excellent city to get your steps up. There's some nice hills and nice lookouts to get up to as well. But look, Tbilisi is also really great for luxury for less. So we've got an incredible offer at the moment, which is staying at the five-star Biltmore Hotel in Tbilisi in a deluxe room there with breakfast daily and return economy class flights for 2,665 dirhams per person.
Let us know if you've got any questions about where to go, what to do, how much to spend. If you've got a budget in mind, 4001. Nathan's still with us until 4 o'clock today. Now, have I mentioned that I climb Kilimanjaro? Is everyone getting a bit bored of that? Because I know my husband is. But Africa, a lot of people stayed on after the climb and went to Serengeti and did safari. And honestly, their photos were just, it was the ultimate FOMO. I really wish we'd extended, but I've got these pesky children and they kept on sending me these really emotional voice notes, so I didn't. But I would love, and especially after hearing Raw Africa on the show earlier, speaking to Deb, that I think a trip is a real once in a lifetime. And actually having just flown there, it wasn't as stressful as I thought it was going to be. It was certainly cheaper than I thought it was going to be. And for anyone thinking about safari, is this a good time of year weather-wise? And what are some of the destinations you would recommend?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great time to go. It's coming just outside of peak season. So, you know, that September-October time tends to be, you know, when everybody wants to get over there. Mm. So November, you've still got great weather, but you just have, you know, a few less other tourists in and around the place, which is always great. Look, we've got an excellent sort of taste of Kenya. So we call it the Glimpse of Kenya. It's 3 nights, which is nice and fast. So you get a night in Kenya and then 2 nights out at a safari lodge. We've got all meals included, game drives to see, you know, all of the wonderful wildlife on offer. It includes obviously a stay in Nairobi, but also then doing your drives around Lake Naivasha National Park and Lake Nakuru National Park as well. All of this, so includes return airport transfers, transportation to the COVID-19 testing centre, as well as park fees.
I love this. Something we have to mention now. It's brilliant. Okay, yeah.
So you've got park fees, you've got government taxes, return economy class flights, and that is all for 4,390 dirhams per person.
Okay, there you go. That's Kenya. Let us know if you've got any questions or need some clarity on the latest rules as well. So looking at trends, Nathan, things that are kind of flying off the virtual shelves or even what you're hearing as an industry insider, where do you think is going to be pretty popping over the next couple of months?
Look, Europe for winter is going to be huge. Everything that we were doing a lot of surveys throughout the summer, everybody just kept telling us they were going to Europe in winter,
Festive market.
Absolutely. And that is now, people are already booking for December as we speak. So usually here, you know, people are a lot more last minute with their bookings.
Not according to the Facebook groups that I'm in. People are saying this Christmas brunch is sold out. Yeah. What about this one? I haven't got a notion. Oh, look, it's still Halloween,
yeah,
right?
Like, it's,
what?
Yeah, it's absolute madness. Organized. So, look, it's a great time to book for that sort of December period. And, you know, if you want to get away and you want to go away for the holidays, then this is really, you know, the perfect time to book before things get too expensive or before things start booking out.
See, I never really know about timings of bookings. You know, people are like, oh, I booked it 3 years ago, which is why it cost 25 fils. And I go, well, that's good for you. And then you have other people going, I've got a last minute deal and it cost me 25 fils. And I'm like in the middle paying, you know, all the money. Are there any rules and kind of guidelines that you would say or that, you know, to help people bag a bargain in terms of timing it right?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, for some of the major cities, you know, if you're thinking London, you're thinking Paris, Munich, those types of cities, definitely the earlier you book, the better. They're always going to be very popular. So leaving it to the last minute sometimes is a bit of a fool's errand. Mm-hmm. But there are some places, if I'm just off the top of my head, thinking about like Poland, thinking about Czech Republic, you know, those smaller cities that don't tend to get all of the spotlight on them, that are just as beautiful, that have so much to offer, and that definitely save you some money if you book, and even if you book sort of up to the last minute.
Okay, thank you for that. Just coming back to London really quickly, because we'll be going, staying local in just a few minutes with some bargain staycations. For December, London, long weekend, I'm certainly not saying I'm going to leave the family behind, but it depends on the price, to be honest, Nathan. Any deals around?
Yes, absolutely. So we've got 3 nights in London staying at the 4-star Rochester Hotel by the Blue Orchid, and that's in Westminster, so awesome location. We've got breakfast daily there and, of course, return economy class flights, and that is 3,080 dirhams per person.
Okay, there you go. We're talking travel this afternoon.
Home or away.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We are live on Facebook and you can contact the studio on 4001. Use, of course, your ARN Play app. We are talking travel. Nathan Taylor with us from Donata Travel, where he's a product manager. And I was just saying, it's a bit warm in here and you're going to cool us off. Let's talk winter trips. There are a number of staycations here in the UAE. But before we get into the kind of the winter side of it, I'd love to get your read, really, because I'll tell you two conversations I'm having with people right now. One is, I'm exhausted, I'm manic, I'm so busy, I've overcommitted myself, I just want to run away. The other one is, Dubai is busy, Dubai is so busy, I can't get a taxi, the weather's getting amazing, you know, more people are moving here, you can't get a villa for love nor money. We're in boomtown, baby.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, what you're seeing when you speak to contacts and colleagues about travel industry. Hotels busy too?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Everyone we speak to is absolutely flat stick. So it's, it is, like you said, the weather is becoming beautiful. We've got so many things to be here for.
Expo.
Yep. The ICC World Cup has definitely brought a lot of people here. Mm. We've got the Formula One coming soon. So no, I think it really is just a really busy time at the moment. And, you know, we've really been spoiled over the last 18 months. We've had incredible staycation offers. We've had lots of availability. And now I think we're all starting to feel like, well, hang on, where are all these?
Hang on, there's other people from other countries coming and getting all of our bargains.
Yeah.
I had actually a message from a friend the other day going, I'm looking to come to Dubai on a week and I'm looking for a budget-friendly hotel. And I was having a look around going, you'll be lucky, Lucy. You're going to have to hustle. And I said, do you want somewhere beachfront or do you want something to explore from? She's like, 100% explore. Happy to go to Kite Beach or a public beach. Doesn't need to be like a resort as such. So I said, well, okay, well, that does definitely help narrow things down. Looking at a couple of staycations, Nathan, if you don't mind, sure. Is there anything that you think is worth our attention before they sell out? So if you are listening now and want to go, you're going to have to pick up your phone pretty fast.
Well, look, I think one of the ones that I really love is the SLS. We've spoken about this many times before.
It is becoming one of the city's hottest foodie destinations.
Absolutely. Two really great restaurants on site. You've got Filia, which is the all-female run Italian restaurant, which is absolutely delicious. And then you've got Dario Cicchino's Cana, which is a meat lover's heaven. So, it's really excellent. Not only that, do they have two infinity pools on the 77th floor. So I think they're some of the highest infinity pools on the planet.
They totally did that with Instagram in mind.
Definitely. Definitely. There's a big duck up there as well. So take a photo with a big duck while you're in the infinity pool.
But incredible views of the Dubai skyline.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. I was lucky enough to be there at sunset a couple of weeks ago and it was just stunning. Absolutely stunning.
So. Okay. So let's talk prices.
Yes.
Surely, is there still a bargain to be had?
There is still a bargain to be had. So we've got one night there in a signature room. We've got breakfast included and that's 465 dirhams per person.
So when you think about availability, are there any kind of blocked out dates? Obviously National Day weekend coming up.
Yeah, National Day weekend definitely is proving tight. There's still some days available, so please check. DonataTravel.com definitely has all of the information you need. We have a dedicated staycations page. We're always looking at that and making sure it's up to date with the best offers and what's available all the time. So that's the best place to go to check for anything that's available.
Right, from our sunny sandy shores to somewhere decidedly chillier. Chasing the Northern Lights. Yeah. How? Where? Yeah. When? How much?
this is one of my personal favorites. I've not done this and I am desperate, desperate, desperate.
This is the man who's traveled to more than 60 countries and you still haven't seen the Northern Lights? You should.
I know.
Working in travel.
Ashamed of myself. but no, we've got an excellent, excellent package. It's four nights in Murmansk, which is in the north of Russia, the far north of Russia, actually. So four nights, it includes breakfast daily. You've got four nights at the four-star hotel, Azimut Hotel, in Murmansk. What you get on this trip is absolutely incredible. So not only are you chasing Northern Lights, you get to do that two times.
Do you get a refund if you don't see them?
No. There's no refunds, but the likelihood that you'll see the Northern Lights in November in Russia is pretty
high. Okay.
So
two opportunities to find them.
Absolutely. You get to visit a reindeer farm. Which is excellent. So you get up close and personal with some beautiful reindeers. You get to do snowmobiling up there in the high Arctic. There's also a husky sledging experience, so you get to go and meet the huskies, see how they live, see how they work up there in the high Arctic. It also takes you to Arctic villages. You get to see the tundra, which is just incredibly epic. So it is really a once-in-a-lifetime trip. We've got all of that, including return economy class flights. Your flights go from Dubai to Moscow and then Moscow up into Murmansk, so it is a little bit of a hop, skip, and a jump to get there. But all of that is coming in at 6,575 dirhams per person.
I like the sound of hugging a reindeer, not gonna lie. Cool. And huskies are on, they're on the bucket list. They really are. Okay, really hope that's offered up some inspiration for you guys. We'll have Nathan back on very, very soon. In the meantime, anyone's wanting to book these deals, find out, of course, the latest on those travel guidelines. Nathan, what is the best website to check out?
Thank you for the alley-oop. The best website is www.donatatravel.com, or go into any one of our shops through all the major malls in the region and see one of our Donata Travel experts.
Okay, I'm going to message you about my 40th and also getting Mass Member Tourist's phone number.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Home or away.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Note to self, do not have a big lunch before the show. Because I think I'm going to need a little restorative coffee midway through. Joining us in the studio now are two people who work with and love food. We've got Chef Tommy, the owner and chef, and Ruby, GM of Baron. It has become the hotspot here in Expo 2020. We have seen people Instagramming the life out of one particular dish, which we're going to be exploring, and hearing a little bit more about their story too. Please let me know some of your favourite Expo eats as well. Where have you been? What have you discovered? Always love your tips and tricks. Now, Baron has opened its first international Expo right here in the heart of Expo. And back in 2019, it was actually awarded place on the 50 Best Discovery list. This is the brand behind the world's 50 best restaurants and the world's 50 best bars. So we are delighted to have them right here in our neighborhood. And delighted to have, as I said, the dream team right here with us this afternoon. Welcome, Ruby. Welcome, Tommy. How are you?
Hi, Helen.
Oh, thank you.
I love talking food, as you know. And in terms of nationalities, got me as a Brit in the studio. Ruby, you are
Lebanese.
And Tommy's flying the flag for
Greece.
Okay, so here's my question to you. It's all coming together on a plate at Baron. First, as Outpost, as we said, Beirut born, but it's not Lebanese food. How do you explain it? If someone lands, you know, comes through Mobility Gate at Expo 2020, Tommy, and says, what is the cuisine? How do you explain it to someone?
It is actually a bit of Lebanon and a bit of Beirut because I lived there. So it's always a reflection of where I've been and where I've cooked. And Lebanon was a big part of my life. And this is where we built Baron as a little dream.
And it's kind of Mediterranean feel. As you say, it's very much the product of your travels and everything kind of through your lens as such.
Yes, fusion. Fusion of where I've worked in Asia, worked in Europe, worked in North America. So it all comes down to play.
And what a perfect place for it to come together at Expo. Well, you've got literally the whole world coming together. Now, there is one particular dish which has kind of stolen the heart and the screens of many a food lover and Instagrammer. It is the cauliflower, which, you know, cauliflower is having a bit of a moment, to be honest. There's all sorts of memes being like, if cauliflower can become a pizza base, then I can become anything. What are you doing with cauliflower, Tommy?
As we do with all the dishes, and especially the vegetable dishes, we try to just like put them at another level. And the cauliflower is something that can stand out. I like eating it as a young boy, whole, by my grandmother, who used to just boil it and then just give it to us with olive oil and lemon juice. So,
what are you doing with it?
Now, we're doing it a little more. We're doing a little more chef stuff. We're whipping butter with some spices. Then we're rubbing it and then steaming it till we get rid of a little enzyme that gives us a little odd smell. And then we put it in a charcoal oven at about 500, 600 degrees Celsius. It comes out and then we smother it in a yogurt tahini tarator sauce.
Any dish that has the word smother in its description, I'm like, yes, sold.
And then we finish it off with walnut pickles that we make in-house and then a pomegranate salsa.
Okay, right.
Sorry. And rose petals and fresh coriander.
Oh. Ruby, how many do you reckon are going out of the kitchen at the moment?
A lot, quite a lot, Helen.
We need to think about kilos of cauliflowers.
Oh my God.
Tell us a little bit about the atmosphere. You there as general manager, and you've put together an amazing team. We're going to be talking about the melting pot of the team members and some of their stories as well. But when someone walks through, how do you describe the atmosphere? Is it more daytime, more nighttime, casual or high-end?
So Helen, being by Al Wasl Plaza, it's very dynamic during the day. So we're really packed with a lot of locals and all other nationalities during lunchtime. Even early dinner, we're quite like busy, but like the nighttime is still, I think when the weather gets better, people will walk in more, sitting outdoor, having anything that they can have. Other than that, it was quite hard to get everyone on board. It was just a month to get everyone. It's like around 50 guys in our team from all over the world. We got all the brand guys from Beirut, the main restaurant managers, the head chefs, the sous chefs, to help me introduce the brand to the country and to the team, to train the team. So it has been like a roller coaster, but a really, really nice one.
It has been welcomed, as I said, with absolute open arms.
Home or away.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Baron has become one of the hottest destinations for food day and night here at Expo 2020. We've got the dream team behind it live in the studio. Chef Tommy and GM Ruby joining us to tell us a little bit about what we can expect from the atmosphere. But really, for me, it's all about the food. Tommy, we've talked about this iconic cauliflower that people are queuing up to. We're going to see a cauliflower shortage in the UAE, and you are the man responsible for this. I hope you realise that. But tell us a little bit about growing up in Greece. Who was cooking, and what were some of your family meals?
So I was born in Greece, but raised in Canada, in the middle of the prairies, Regina, Saskatchewan. Say that a few times.
No, thank you.
Immigrant family. Grandmother lived with us for the first 15 years. So it was very much a typical Greek lifestyle, but in the prairies, you know, little house on the prairies and things. So
little Greek house on the
prairies. Yes, yes. So I grew up with whatever was tradition. And this is what is still based on what I do now, you know, of the dishes. You try to stay as true to the form of what it is, but then to take it somewhere else. And
are there any smells on the food front that take you back?
Absolutely. Mastic, orange, and butter, because when they used to make the Easter bread, when we were young, they would make it in these huge pails. And then the blankets that were wrapping it would smell of all the butter and the mastic and the orange and everything. So I used to take those blankets and wrap myself in them as a little kid, and then these are smells that I still remember today.
Oh my goodness. And what about when you had that moment of realization that you wanted food to be your life, your career?
It was in university, and I said I just wanted to do something with my hands. I didn't want to my brain.
What did you sign up to do at university?
It was just general arts.
Okay. But then how do you start? A lot of chefs start in their teens, you know, and they're washing dishes and working up that hierarchy, the ranks of the kitchen.
A little different than Europe in Canada. It's in Canada, they don't steer you anywhere at the age of 16. We were still in high school. It was just from summer jobs. And then we were the only Greek family that didn't own a restaurant, to be honest with you. And I just ended up wanting to go become a chef. And I'd been working in restaurants in the front of the house. Mm-hmm. Then I moved to Vancouver and went to De Brule Culinary Institute. And that's where I took a pastry course, a bread course, and a culinary course. So got it all and lived there for like almost 2 years. And then it was on a jet plane to Paris.
Tell us a little bit about deciding to open up, as I said, the first international outpost here at Expo 2020. Why here, and how did it happen?
Someone that is like a little bit of a mentor, Simon Wright and TGP, who's actually a regular who would sit at the counter in Baron, in Beirut. And with his group, he said, we have an opportunity in Expo. So
it was a selfish move. It was him going, I really want you to be there. And I think other people, yeah, well, I'm all about the problem solving. It sounds like he's got it absolutely sorted.
He was actually our first counter seat here in Expo 2.
That's perfect. Yes. That's absolutely perfect. Chef Tommy joining us this afternoon from Baron. We've also got General Manager Ruby Alshad joining us. We're going to be talking a little bit about putting that team together, how this restaurant has literally been a lifeline for so many people right here in the UAE.
Home or away.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We are talking food this afternoon and joined live in studio by the General Manager of Baron, Ruby Alshad, and we've got Chef Tommy with us, as he's the owner and the chef. And Tommy's been talking a little bit about the cuisines coming together, a mix of Well, just about everything. You, Greek-born, Canadian-raised, travelled extensively, first bar opened in Beirut, and it has resulted in a really eclectic and exciting menu. I've heard about some interesting sauce combinations as well, some flavours coming together people are getting excited about. Tell me, what might blow our taste buds as well as our minds?
Besides the cauliflower?
Of course.
We do a lovely, we take Italian gnudi, which is like a flourless pasta, and then we do it with mushroom XO, which is from
all the umami.
Asia. Yes.
Oh, all yes. Right.
So that's one dish. And then there's other ones where we do simple ideas of soy tahini with asparagus, veal breast, and then a beautifully fried egg and some pine nuts and butter.
Okay. Goodness me. I'm sorry if you haven't had lunch, guys. There's going to be tummies rumbling all over Dubai. What about, do you have a sweet tooth yourself? What about desserts? What's your pick?
I'm not huge on sweets, we have a great dish that we call the mess. And then we do it at table side and we just throw everything on a plate and then give you a hammer and beat it all up and then spoon
what
it.
What flavors?
We do like labneh yogurt ice cream. We do yogurt, whipped cream, raspberries. It's like an Eton mess, but
really
with
messy.
Us. And then we do a spiced dukkah, but sweet dukkah, not the savory.
See, this is exactly why I think people have been getting so excited about it. And Ruby, a big part of it, you can have the best food in the menu, but if you haven't got the people, if you haven't had that sense of service and hospitality and understanding, it all falls apart, which is where you as general manager come in. Tell us a little about putting the team together, because Baron has such an amazing reputation internationally. It's a lot of pressure when it comes to getting the right people in place. How did you begin that process?
Trust me, it was a lot of pressure. And as you know, we're only here for 6 months and it's a very short period of time. Mm-hmm. It's not that you have a lot of time to do mistakes and learn. You've got to make the team train in a very short period of time. So what we had in mind is to get key people from Beirut, which know the brand, they've been serving and they've been working for the brand longer than I have. Maybe I haven't mentioned this, but I have been working for Baron 4 years ago. I was in the kitchen. I was a chef in the kitchen. I was head pastry chef for a while and then I left. So now I'm back leading the brand in the UAE. So I also quite know the brand a lot and it was easy for me to get all the team together. Mm-hmm. So yes, you need a large team. So I had to get a lot of people, hire a lot of people, but I have the key people from Beirut who trained and helped me get it going.
And also at the time when Lebanon's having a very, very difficult time, and I know it's been a lifeline for many people who wanted to stay working in the food industry, an incredible opportunity to come here. And as you say, those who really understand that brand DNA, who understand exactly Tommy's vision from the outset and are here to kind of celebrate that and communicate it to people, not just from Dubai, but people all over the world. You mentioned before you've got a really big mix of nationalities coming through the door. Have you noticed any ordering trends or any kind of certain group demographics going after certain dishes, or is it just all the cauliflower?
To be honest, our menu is quite eclectic. It's not something that a lot of people are familiar with. They're familiar with single ingredients, but not necessarily the whole mix of things. And when they see halloumi, they think it's a salad, but it's not. When they see calamari, they think it's fried, but it's not. So I'm not sure I'm seeing a trend, but I'm definitely sure that social media helps a lot in making a dish popular, in the sense that it's large, it's good for sharing, it's nice, it's colorful. But other than that, I think not sure. We'll still have a trend.
We'll ask you in March. Tommy, yes. Maybe interestingly raising a point there about social media playing a role, which, you know, Expo, of course, there's photo opportunities around every single corner. And food has been a really big part of that over the course of the last month. Are you getting people coming in just holding up photos of food rather than looking at the menu?
So we actually have a different approach in our social media. We're not into the food aspect and whatnot. We always try to let you have a vision or a feeling of the vibe. Mm-hmm. Vibe's more important to me as a chef or a restaurateur than it is the actual product. But what we've noticed is everything that's happened has been through social media, of just what you have eaten and taken a picture of. So
that must be interesting for you, having been in the business for so long, in terms of the impact it's had on that diner's experience.
Yeah, so I've been pushing away from it, in all honesty. And I haven't, from the Baron Instagram site, we haven't posted yet.
Whoa!
We've let everyone else who's surrounding us and helping us become this brand do all that work. And now we will step in and, help go on to the end of Expo.
It sounds like there's a real kind of community around the food here as well. You know, lots of collaborations between pavilions. I saw, you know, Australia and Thailand having a collaboration, and, you know, obviously you guys are on site going out and exploring. What's been your kind of expo highlight so far, Tommy? It doesn't have to be food related, but what are you enjoying?
First and foremost, I'm absolutely blown away by the vibe walking around. And I love the fact that it's a completely different place during the AM. You see, you get to see everything in its clarity, but at nighttime, what they've done is just awesome. It's like, it's really mind-blowing to just to be able to walk through and see all those, all the lighting and everything. It's just really another place.
I couldn't agree more. I have to say I'm loving my Wednesdays at Expo. I'm coming back on Friday with the kids. What about you, Ruby? What have you kind of, what's turned your head or really wowed you in this last month?
What I think is there's a lot of new things that you learn, whether it's kids, whether it's adults, whether it's in the food, whether it's architecture. So you walk in and it's like you're learning, you're seeing things from the future. It's just so interesting to see. It's not lame. It's nice. You have a lot of food options. You walk around. There's some greenery. So I think that's it's quite perfect for the whole 6 months.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It's you have these kind of energetic areas and then these little pockets of peace. And, you know, there's like a flow of the day. And then suddenly you go around a corner and, you know, there's, you know, a giant lion, you know, puppet kind of crawling towards you. It's never the same day twice. So thank you so much for being part of the show today. Now, this is going to be a really difficult question, but I'm going to ask both of you. I was going to say your last meal on Earth, but I've changed my mind. And I know it might be like picking a favorite child or a best friend, but if someone comes through the doors of Baron, what do you think they should order today or tonight to really understand what you're all about? Ruby, you're going to go first, I'm afraid, while Tommy glares at you.
So you want me to pick a dish from the menu?
Yeah.
I would say the brisket bun.
Ooh.
It has been a star dish from Beirut, and as much as bows are very commercial right now, we still do it in a very nice and special way.
Okay, I'm sold on brisket. Sir Tommy, what are you saying?
It would have to be like an encompassing meal, like to sit down. So obviously to start with the cauliflower, and then for us to be able to go on to the other shared dishes.
Just plain greedy, but I'll since you are the man behind the brand, I will let you have it. Julie saying, being the Baron in Beirut, absolutely incredible. Well, you can try it here at Expo 2020. Huge congratulations to you both on such a successful launch. Wonderful atmosphere, food that is being shouted about from the rooftops. And yeah, as I said, UAE farmers better get growing some cauliflowers, because there's going to be a shortage soon enough. You can find Baron here at Expo 2020 and online. Not that they're posting. Doesn't sound like they need to.
Home or away.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We're talking travel this afternoon and delighted to be joined by the CEO and founder of Raw Africa. We've got Deb Kalmeyer joining us. She's in town for Expo with some really exciting announcements, both for here in the region, but also in her native Africa as well. Thank you so much for being with us, Deb. I know you're incredibly busy, so it's an honour to have you with us. Can you tell us a little bit about Raw in general before we start talking about what's in store for next year?
Yes, well, thank you so much for having me. Raw Africa does specialised experiences in sub-Saharan Africa. So we cover 13 countries from Kenya all the way down to South Africa, doing customised experiences for people looking to get a little bit deeper and past the sort of Insta photo moment with the giraffe, but going sort of deeper, whether it's architecture, food, all sorts of different conservation programs. We do a lot of stuff with women's empowerment, and then some private jet trips as well.
You can't gloss over the private jet trips. Come on, what does this involve?
Well, that's what we just delivered, the greatest safari on Earth, with in partnerships with Emirates Airlines. And it was the first in the world of its kind. It was to cover all of Africa in one go. And when you say all of Africa, as an African myself, what are the top four experiences? It was the gorillas, it was the migration, it was the Okavango Delta in Botswana, and the Victoria Falls.
Oh,
so
my goodness.
Because of that beautiful aircraft and Emirates' wonderful service, we were able to curate this incredible experience for 10 guests.
Trip of a lifetime.
Absolutely.
If you can forget your Elon Musk going to space, that would be the vehicle I would want to be on.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, it made a difference. Where we went, it was seen as a a sort of Olympic torch for tourism, mm-hmm. for the African tourism market. And I think, you know, what was so rewarding for me was to see the hope of the people on the ground. You know, so many people have been decimated by COVID, and this was really that sort of emblem of light and inspiration
that while
luxury tourism is going to come back, people will take it and they will come. And yeah, it was really, really rewarding. Of course, the guests had a marvelous time, but it was more important to see the reaction of the people on the ground.
And them really understanding the recognition that, mm-hmm. that their hometowns and native lands are getting internationally. I had somewhat comparable experience when I was in Tanzania and talking to the porters that were taking us up Kilimanjaro, and they are used to doing between 10 and 10, 20 trips a year. Mm-hmm. And the last 2 years they've done two. Oh. And, you know, thinking about the impact it's had on their local economy, you know, them turning their gardens into literally just growing food to feed their families, and they were so grateful for mm-hmm. our enthusiasm, and as a result they were so excited to have us back and be like, you have to tell your friends to come back to Kilimanjaro, please, 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 mm-hmm. because it's their livelihood.
There is a huge sense of gratitude when you go there now. I took a group back last November, and it was the first time I'd gone back. It was an incredibly emotional experience. I didn't expect the staff to be that sort of happy to see us, but was wonderful as well.
You were talking about female empowerment, and that's a big part of why you're here at mm-hmm. Expo with Raw. Tell us a little bit about your philosophy about when African women rise, what happens, do you think, Deb?
So our vision, or my vision statement for the company, is if African women rise, wildlife will thrive. And, you know, as a woman, I feel like it's in our DNA to be caregivers, and tourism is the perfect fit. Unfortunately, it's been, you know, a very male-dominated industry until this time, and women in the industry have been in housekeeping, in reservations. They haven't risen to senior positions. And so about 4 years ago, I started a movement to try to use the power of perception through travel and staffing lodges with women GMs, women sommeliers, women pilots, women anti-poachers, rangers, just to be able to show that women can do these jobs just as well as men. It's been great because not only are we breaking the sort of glass ceilings from a Western side, but from a tribal perspective as well, men are seeing that their daughters, sisters, whatever, can also do the same jobs they are. And so it's an incredibly powerful use of travel, mm-hmm. bringing international guests to come and see some of the roles women are playing in conservation. People working with elephants like Dr. Lucy King, people working at the Wasu Lions in Kenya. Nobody knows about these programs. It's really quite incredible to give these local women a platform to share what they're doing with the women travelers. And in so many ways, it's built sort of all sorts of conversations, opened up all different ways of funding. It's not a philanthropist trip, but incredibly, you know, women want to get behind other women and support some of the things that they're doing. So that's, you know, what I'm really keen on is bringing a group of women from this region to come and experience this.
I love this idea, kind of really bringing people together and getting an understanding of what people have been through. From that, I mean, since we're talking tribal, you know, in some ways it really is when we think about Bedouin here. Tell us a little bit about Expo then. How are you finding it so far? Well, I know you haven't had much of a chance.
No, I'm just gobsmacked, really. I mean, wow, you just built an entire country, it seems. A little, you know, incredible. And I'm always so inspired every time I come to Dubai, the energy, the internationalism, and the fact that I think you've got, what, 192 countries
here. Right.
Yeah, it's absolutely enormous.
You haven't got enough time to explore.
No, of course I haven't. But the thing that impressed me the most was this Women's Pavilion, the first one ever at an expo, and to be doing that here, and what a job Cartier have done. It was just so impressive.
For anyone that wants to find out more about Raw Africa, about the trips you've got going on and some of the programs you're looking to highlight, what's the best way of getting in touch with you and the team?
On our website, rawafrica.com, you'll find all our information.
And if someone's going to take a trip, we're just one destination to the continent. I know it's like picking a favourite child, but where holds a special place in your heart that you would love the world to see?
Oh, I definitely think Zimbabwe. I'm sorry, I can't say anything else. I mean, you've got the Victoria Falls there, one of the natural wonders of the world, but you've got some of the most fabulous, warm, welcoming people, speak good English, it's safe and secure, and some incredible levels of hospitality.
I'll add it to my list.
This is Dubai Eye 103.8, live from Expo 2020 Dubai.
You're listening to Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
You can tune in to Afternoons with me, Helen Farmer, live on Dubai Eye 103.8, Sunday to Thursday between 2 and 5. Don't forget to rate and subscribe to this podcast. It helps other people find us, boost us in the ratings, and you'll get it direct to your phone.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.